Isaac, thanks
Cool,
for
Nick.
joining me today.
Thank you.
We had Norman here from Norwood Junk Action, and he was brilliant, honestly. His energy, his vibe,
Yeah.
he's fantastic. So you've obviously got some big shoes for you to fill,
Yeah.
but I'm looking forward to having a conversation with you, understanding the two contrasts and how you've been able to kind of build a synergy.
Yeah.
And tell me a little bit more about Norwood Junk Action.
Yeah, thanks. I guess I'm never gonna match Norman's energy. We're kind of like a bit of a duality, I guess.
Yeah,
I'm his yin to
I'm
his
getting
yang.
like stir crazy, you know, Richard Pryor and
Like he's definitely like the one that kind of brings the vibrancy to the room, and I'm maybe I guess trying to be a bit more of a, well, I just naturally am a bit more of a calmer
It's good
spirit.
to have those balances though,
Yeah, no,
because if you're
completely.
both crazy, you're both really quiet, you know, the balance isn't there. So it's always good to have that sort of balance you can kind of.
Yeah, no, completely. But North Jenkins isn't just us. I should stress that highly. Like, there's all, loads of people that have always gratefully given their time. Like, and I'm a volunteer as well, and everyone kind of like chips in. It started off as a community project, and
So how exactly did it start then?
So Norman, during lockdown, like, so this is Norman's kind of em like energy, origin story, but like during lockdown, he was walking around the park and he started doing litter picking. And then there's an organization called South Norwood Litter Pickers that he started to get involved with. And he's an artist himself. And so, from an artistic inclination, I think he's always had the facet where he's always wanted to work within the community. And has already always done that, and so built up Norwood Junk Action as a way to kind of do litter picking sessions and transform kind of the way in which we explore litter, but from an artistic perspective, I guess. And then from that, I started doing different sessions, and I think one of the first ones was Notting Hill Carnival, and like
Tons of litter there. Tons.
yeah, exactly. Like, I'm sure you're aware of like how much stuff, and like, so there was like costumes that were made out of the litter, like crisp packets and things that were used during the parade and floats. But yeah, thank you very much for having us, or like both me and Norman, and yeah, I look forward
No,
to
honestly, it's
having a conversation.
when Ash kind of introduced me to Norman and introduced me to the organization, I was a bit, I wouldn't say confused, but I was just trying to think, you know, where can this be beneficial for C4? How can C4 be beneficial for you? And the immediate answer wasn't there. But after when I started talking to Norman, I was like, do you know what? This guy's fantastic. What he's doing is fantastic. And then he started talking about all the other elements as well. What happens from litter picking, even if we remove the art piece from in it. And he was talking about, you know, bringing community together, clashes in cultures and how people express themselves, different diversity of people from younger, older, black, white,
Completely.
the people who do the litter picking and versus the people who is creating the litter as well, and kind of having their perspectives on it as well. And then he got quite deep. And for me, when he started getting quite deep, that's when it started like peeling back more of the can, and I kind of got under the hood a little bit more. And he started talking about how people communicate with each other, and how it opens up the conversation to so much different things. And that's what kind of got my brain ticking. You know, I was thinking to myself, like, what? This is now getting interesting because we've got so many different teams and sort of departments of services that we do, and it would be quite good to kind of build that team and put them together, and they actually have conversations which is maybe outside of work or what are normal conversations would be, you know. And it just seemed like a movement more than a business.
I think that what you're saying is completely true. Like, and it's something that we've kind of always come across. Like, we're working with Crystal Palace a lot, and like the one of the first things someone who introduced us to Crystal Palace gets asked is like, oh, so what is Normal Junk Action? Like, what is it? And like, we've been in the process of making our website, and like, on the face of it, you've got litter picking sessions, and you've got the, and you've got the art that comes out at the end of it. But then it's about the, it kind
there's
of
so much more.
Yeah,
to
the
it,
intangibles
though.
And the things that are like are a bit harder to express and communicate.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's interesting you mentioned about team building and fostering, because like that's an element where in which, like, within these workshops, like, you have these creative, like with kids and adults, it's completely different. It's really interesting, because like with kids, you have to like kind of coach them out of it, like, whereas with adults, they kind of like naturally bring it to the fore and like kind of want to be a bit more like, you get this kind of cliqueness, but not as much as with kids, where you're like, they're like, I'm not doing that.
When you say kids, what sort of ages are you talking?
So we've been doing workshops with 13 to 16 year olds, and like,
that's gotta be difficult.
And like,
it?
So like, just trying to like, you have to separate them out.
Yeah.
And then like, go like split an attack basically.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Whereas like, you've got also younger kids who their enthusiasm just comes to the fore.
Yeah.
And then with adults, say for like within like companies and organizations, then it's a bit, you have to say what your overall aim is and what you're going to be doing, and then kind of let them kind of like lead their way and have a bit more agency in how they deliver it basically. But yeah, exactly what you're saying is, it fosters a communication, and on that deeper level, trying to understand like, why in which is all this waste created? And then like, you can start to have maybe like, because we've got more in common as people than we have differences, like, regardless of who we are. And it's just kind of maybe trying to bring that out basically.
I mean, for me, I find cleaning quite therapeutic.
All right. Yeah, nice.
And as soon as he started talking, and even yourself, like, we're having conversations, and it's already triggering things in my brain, because there's so much sort of relatable things that we do around cleaning, which I think kind of would give you, will give me the same sort of feeling of litter picking. I like to do things in volume. I quite like that type of almost like maybe like isolation, you know, like, you know, when you can really start to think about what you're doing, but you're not methodically doing it. So with litter picking, I could be thinking about a lot of things, or I could be having a conversation. And that's kind of similar with cleaning. If you've ever, have you ever cleaned in a team before?
At what, like in work and stuff, like workshops.
Even if you think about sort of your litter picking days where you do it in a team, right? You're probably litter picking, but you're actually having a conversation. It's got nothing to do with litter picking.
Completely, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So you're actually doing something subconsciously. And I think there is a sort of common ground there when it comes to cleaning.
Nice.
A little bit. But when Norman first spoke to me, I didn't, it wasn't there. But then I was like, you know what, even if I'm doing like gardening, or you know, you could be washing your car, or you end up doing something, but you've actually opened up the doors to conversations that you probably wouldn't have. And especially if you're having those type of conversations with people that you're not used to having conversations with.
Yeah.
So it's great for you to get different perspectives, different understandings, empathy, different journeys. Because you end up talking to the same people all the time, you're going to get the same sort of results. You're going to have the same sort of conversations.
Like we get into a bit of an echo chamber, right?
Like, exactly.
It's one of the interesting things that, like, well, work is one of those places where you meet people from different walks of life that you don't generally meet. And but like you were saying before, like, perhaps you don't get to know them as well as you could do.
Yeah.
Like, even though you spend like,
or even like, you could be like sitting across the table from someone.
Yeah.
And, you know, someone could be going through something which is quite deep. And you don't, it's almost inappropriate to have those type of conversations. But when you're doing something like cleaning, or you're doing something like this, it kind of allows you to have those type of conversations where it doesn't feel like, you know, you're talking.
It's in a formalized environment.
Exactly. So, love the idea.
Okay.
I love the idea that you're doing it within the community as well, and you're obviously not trying to scale it to be some sort of like huge commercial business. And I think there is definitely opportunity for C4 to be involved. Now, what we do is we work with a lot of corporate organizations, sure. and mm. corporate organizations will use suppliers and use their supply chain mm. to increase their sustainability as well.
Mm.
So they may be doing X amount towards their sort of carbon emissions mm. or being more sustainable, but if they're working with 100 people who are all pushing in that same direction, it actually makes
offsets their carbon.
Exactly. It makes their drive a little bit stronger as well.
Sure.
So that's definitely a reason why. But I think now that I've had these conversations with you and Norman, I've almost got like a bit more of a different motivation to do it as well. Like, sure. yes, it's going to improve C4, but I think from a humane perspective, and I'm definitely... I definitely like to exercise my depth as a human being.
Okay.
And
nice.
I like to have these type of conversations with people
mm.
who you may not necessarily speak to all the time. Mm. Even people on my team, like I've worked with X amount of people within my office and in the business, but our conversations are relatively quite narrow, where it would be great to have those type of conversations, you know, where you talk about children, you talk about your history, you talk about your culture and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, there is immediate interest from a sustainability perspective, but I mean, I think actually talking about it from a Courtney perspective,
yeah.
I'm really interested in engaging and opening more doors and more conversations.
No, it sounds great. But it's interesting you mentioned about the sustainability aspect, because like one thing that kind of gets a bit missed out is that you've got the sustainability point from like an environmental view, but then you've also got social aspects of it where you have social sustainability.
Do you know, where would you say Norwood Junk Action actually lands more on social responsibility or sustainability?
I think it definitely is more on social.
It is, isn't
like,
it?
Rather than like that, there's an environmental impact, and that's something that we deliver things by trying to have a conversation. But like, there's quantifiable things and tangibles which we haven't really focused on per se. And I'm not to say it at the detriment of anything, but like, it's just not the way in which we've been engineered. Like, for example, we could have a quantifying like amount of litter that we've collected and like how many times we regularly do it, and ways in which we could calculate how much litter, how much things we've saved. And I think that's probably definitely something that I'd like to look at. But
is it measuring it?
Measuring, but also having quantifiable like information and things that you can have. Go to places where they can understand the organization. Exactly, when you say going into organizations about carbon emissions,
mm-hmm.
if you have these figures, then they have a different view and point and take in which you can communicate and they can understand. It's just a different language.
So you're talking about businesses now?
Yeah, I'm just saying.
Because the normal human being mm-hmm. who's got nothing to do with, they've got no motivation.
Yeah.
Apart from they want their neighborhood or their area to look good.
Yeah.
But from a company perspective, it's all about numbers, right?
Yeah, exactly.
They want to know, okay, if we're going to invest X amount, what do we get from it? What's sure. the accreditation that we get for it?
Yeah.
You know, how do we get to kind of sing and shout about that type of thing? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah,
being able to package it for them like that?
That is one element. But like you say, I think the biggest driving factor for both, but for everyone at Norwood Junction is the social aspect
mm-hmm.
and the stories and things that kind of derive from that, and about the local community and how that can then spread out to other communities, mm-hmm. basically. Because there's been some beautiful things that have been happening in terms of the volunteers that are getting involved and mm-hmm. like people with kind of learning difficulties or like who have like some mental health issues of their own. Mm. Like I've one like signed up when I was depressed. Mm. And so yeah, like there's all these different aspects of like kind of helping people come out of what they need to do.
Yeah, I think face value, great sustainability, doing your bit for the community, but then I really do think that's like a couple inches and you can really delve deep into the ocean, and there's a whole different story there and stuff.
Yeah.
So you touched about inquiring when you had a bit of depression. What was that like?
at the time, like, but it was about 2.5 years ago, and I was going through some issues with a previous employer who was being really nasty, and then kind of like that lasted for about 2 years.
Yeah.
And then also, as a result of that, I was drinking and using alcohol as a way to escape.
Yeah.
And kind of, so I had to like reorganize and reorient my whole life basically. And part of that was kind of, I've always wanted to do volunteering, but like I kind of found ways to do it basically. And Norwood Junk Action was one of them. Like I grew up in Norwood Junction, like from when I was 3 years old. And so like I've always seen the community and like transfer, like change from like before it used to have a, like a quite wide diversity of like different shops on the road. Like a stationer's, a school uniform place, yeah. And like all these different kind of like shops. Used to have the Santander, for example, which is not like they're all gone now, and it seems to be a very uniform amount of type of business that is there basically, or shut shops. And so when I saw Noel Junk Action
on Instagram.
No, but like I think he did. So Norman named it Noel Junk Action on purpose because for this reason.
Yeah.
But for the duality. But like, as things go, it might change into Junk Action or something of that nature because we want to grow it to different communities.
Yeah.
I reached out and I found like kind of volunteering and initially doing the website, and doing something in the community like really kind of brought me out of this headspace of like the world is ending it just meeting and like converging, like talking to other people that you're out of your own like kind of headspace is really great. So that really helped. And then other things were like exercise and like kind of working out regularly and cold water swimming and like basically the social aspect kind of really helped to like bring it out to the fore basically.
It's quite a hard step, I think, because I think we've all been at the mercy of depression at some point in our lives. And whether that's having a bad day, bad week, bad month, you may have lost somebody, things are not quite going well for you. I think a lot of that plays into how you kind of manifest as well, because I think manifestation is happening 24/7, right? And whether you are manifesting a good situation, a bad situation, love, financial loss, you're always thinking about something. And I'm a true believer in whatever you are thinking about, you are attracting that to happen. So you have to be really careful with the films that you watch, the music that you listen to, all these type of things, because if you really do become invested in these things, you will then start to...
It's interesting. So what do you think? You mentioned, for example, movies. What kind of movies do you watch and not watch?
So do you ever like watch a movie, right, and you're so invested in the protagonist in that situation, you start to almost feel that weight, like I'm the one who's on the run here, I'm the one who's just like just lost my wife or whatever that is, like that type of level for me is like almost like a manifestation when you think like that about anything which is something which means a lot to you. That's the type of level, like you're signaling it at that type of level.
Sure.
So when I say like movies and stuff like that, I don't expect anybody to like watch a film and constantly have that frame of mind, But if you are, you know, watching things which is signaling a particular vibe that you're on, if you continue to have that vibe over a long period of time, you're going to attract that type of energy.
Completely.
So what made you actually delve into doing the volunteering? Because I've been in a bad place mentally, and I don't know if I would have had the right bravery or mindset for me to think, I'm in a really, really bad place. I'm going to do like some volunteering. I'm going to do this. Usually what happens is, for me, things happen by accident.
Yeah.
I could be in my garden and I don't know, I pick up a, I pull out a weed and then I pull out another weed and then I pull out another weed. And before you know, I'm doing the gardening.
Yeah,
and it's almost by accident.
Right.
But I didn't consciously think, okay, my headspace is not here. Let me try and do some gardening. And if you would have suggested to me, you know, you look a bit down at the moment, I can tell that you're not right, let's do some gardening, I'll push back on that straight away. I'll be like, look, I'm not interested in that. Made you
it's definitely an aspect of like something I've always intended to do, and so it was a way of like having a positive, net positive effect on both something that I'm doing myself, but also kind of spreading kind of positivity out to the world. Like that's kind of where the inclination came from. Also, like what within the work that I do, it tends to be I'm making design lights, and like the kind of markets and places that I design for tend to be quite either exclusive or elitist, or maybe like very like quite expensive essentially. And so I've always felt a bit that my ideas are maybe are less democratic than they could be, or like they don't reach as many people as as, or like art could do essentially, or like. And so that's kind of where was also a driving factor in
you could express yourself more.
Express, like people are able to view what you produce in that isn't a way you have to go into a gallery, or where you have to feel like you have to be a certain way to or like have to go to a certain restaurant to experience this type of vibe or lighting or design or whatever it is. It then hopefully inspires other conversations and things like that, and that's kind of where the art aspect of Noel Junk Action comes from, where you see this like clock tower made of litter that looks exactly like the South Nord clock tower.
Yeah.
And then you're like, oh wow, they made this. And then like the amount of people that are like, oh wow, okay, like, oh, look at all this litter, like, oh, where did you get it from? And then you start to peel back, like you say, different things that come from it.
And
social aspects.
Yeah.
I don't know if I answered your question or...
So my original question is, what made you get up? I'm not feeling good right now, I'm going to try and do something positive, because that's not my mindset when I'm doing...
Sure.
When I'm trying to do something positive. So it's quite brave for you to do that, really.
I
guess you had a motive, didn't you?
Yeah, I get it. I knew it would be something that would be enjoyable. I just had the sense that that would be something that I'd be able to do that would... if not make me feel better, make someone else feel better at least. So
yeah, I get that. I get that. Talk about lights.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, lights, camera, action. So I had a look at your Instagram. You showed me, you demonstrated to me what you are able to do with light and the stuff that you've created. And some of it is crazy to even think that you can manipulate sculptures and light and kind of create that type of artistic vision, really. Firstly, I think you should probably shout out your Instagram as well, so people can view.
Yeah, sure. So I just started a business called Iridescent, and the website is iridescent.lighting, and the kind of focus of that is bespoke lighting, I guess. So there's two sides of it. There's the kind of artistic sculptural side, which feeds into the Wall-Jack Action quite well in terms of sculptural forms or kind of artistic expression, exploring materials. So working with ceramics at the moment with a friend, like making ceramic 3D printed cases, and then gonna like
put Oh, it looks so good. It looks really, really good. Yeah.
And then, but then with Nord Drunk Action, did the bottles. Yeah. Like, so we collect.
So we're talking like plastic bottles. People fight. So like Coke bottles or.
Yeah, exactly. So like the amount.
Wrong with Coke bottles. But
aluminium, like, so. And I've got a 3D printer at home, and what there's these machines now that you can take plastic bottles and you could strip them,
yeah,
and then you can make the material.
So it's almost like a wire, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I've seen that. Yeah.
And so it becomes this massive strand of spaghetti.
Yeah.
But then you can then put that and you reuse that as the material for your objects essentially.
Yeah, yeah.
So you draw up something. And you could maybe draw this hand pull over here, which I'll ask you about in a second.
Sure.
and then you can print that off again. And so you've turned this plastic bottle into something that is going to be reused rather than going to landfill.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of where an aspect of a Nord Drunk Action that I'd like to explore a bit more.
Yeah.
And then one other project that kind of like ties in the lighting to Nord Drunk Action is been collecting vapes. We've got about 400 at the moment.
Very interesting.
And I'm thinking about kind of like a massive pavilion or kind of sculptural piece that all loads of vapes have little lights in them.
Yeah.
And they have little lights and LEDs and they've got vapor and they've also got batteries. And I'm thinking about trying to harness the power of a battery by using like a small dynamo and then using that battery to power the light source inside of them. But you can then have that
be like a big illuminated light.
Yeah. So the idea would be maybe you walk into this thing and you've got these loads of spinning, like the wind would be blowing these things that would be then charging the light to come onto it. And so that's kind of what I've got in my head, but like as a thing it's kind of interesting because like you've gone from like cigarettes to like vapes in which like you've got all of these things inside, and like and the reason why I'm thinking of dandelion is because like the dandelion is as you sound like you like gardening, so
I mean not massively.
Not massively but yes. like dandelions are the ones that you can blow.
Yeah, yeah.
And like they're one of the most strongest resistant plants, and as an idea, with smoking, it's kind of like people love this thing, and it blows its way over the world, and then like now it's kind of turning into vapes, and so that was kind of the inspiration of the idea. And then on the other side of the lighting is kind of designing the lights that are lighting this office now.
Mm.
Or like kind of like spotlights and like in restaurants and stuff, and yeah, kind of that element.
Yeah. So I mean, from a creative perspective, it's like I said, I'm blown away with what you can do to manipulate different shapes, different lighting, different shade and all that sort of stuff. Was there like a bit of a clash with you and Norman when you was kind of maybe putting your creative hat on and his creative? It's like, oh, I can imagine like a lot of chefs in one kitchen.
It's interesting you mentioned that. I guess whenever either of us have got our creative hat on, maybe one of us takes the creative hat off.
Okay.
I think, well, I definitely do that when Norman has his creative explosions or ambient.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't want to be like wrestling with that, but yeah. But yeah, I think we've got a good synergy and a good duality, like in which we communicate. It was interesting because like the one thing I wanted to ask you about with cleaning data sensors, and like you said that the creative aspect that you were blown away by. But one thing that you might have talked about before was you specifically decided to focus on
data sensor industry,
yeah. But, and you said that. Previously that you did that because you want to be really good at one thing, and like do you find that you have like creative ideas and explorations within doing that
within the industry?
So
I mean, from a creative perspective, I've been quite fortunate. It didn't feel fortunate at the time, but I feel quite fortunate because when I started C4, I was coming off of the back of working in a huge organization and there was a huge gap with acknowledging and valuing their staff. So I think I'm still gravitated towards making sure that all the employees within the business has a sense of value. And the more I can kind of innovate and push ideas and give them a voice and give them ideas on stuff, and they can come back to offer ideas, that's only going to increase the quality of our services.
Okay.
And the effect of that will probably be data centers are going to get a better service when it comes to cleaning and hygiene. We haven't invented anything or created some fancy bit of art like what you've done in order for us to put inside a data center, but I think culturally our position is something slightly different to what they're probably used to seeing.
Okay.
I think the motivation behind us delivering the service to their needs, I think that's slightly different to what they're used to receiving. And if I don't know if you've ever been in a data center before, but they can be quite distant.
Okay.
So if you're working in a server server space, you're working in the data hall, it could take you like 5 or 10 minutes for you to get outside and get some fresh air.
Right, I see.
So I find that sort of people who are working in these industries and working in the type of establishments, they've all got like a similar type of culture within themselves where it's almost like if you can imagine someone like working in NASA and you can't come out.
Sure.
Like almost like you're on a space station, you can't come out.
Yeah.
And that's how it feels sometimes. Yeah. And the amount of security you need to get past and the amount of ID check, security doors, passes, working permits, all this sort of stuff before you can actually start working. I think that probably plays a little bit on their conscience and their behavior patterns and how they do things. So I guess with our teams, we're almost like, I'd like to think that we bring a bit more life to the party.
Okay, cool.
So, you know, we'll come in and the way we do things is different. So if you think of like your typical sort of commercial cleaning company, how I picture it is, especially large scale ones as well, people walking around in suits, a few sort of separated offices.
Sure.
And then maybe a few supervisors who go outside and sort of bark orders at the staff. And then they feel like a number or they feel like they're not being valued or, you know, the boss turns up in a Range Rover or something like that.
Sure.
And it just kind of has that type of horrible type of feeling. And that's the position that I was in before I started C4.
Yeah. Well, it's like a very pyramid structure type of hierarchy.
Yeah, and you know what? It's just ugly. Mm. Like, even like how we operate in our office here, like we've got banks or desks where everyone can talk, come up with ideas. When we're doing presentations, we do the presentations together. Everybody's got ideas. Everybody's writing down notes. We're talking about what we can do to improve the operatives. We're talking about all these type of elements on inclusion and performance and quality and all these type of things. And I don't imagine that happening at sort of larger corporate spaces, commercial spaces. So I like to feel like we've got a vibe.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes the industry lacks a vibe.
Yeah.
And I like to think that we've got a vibe.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
And we are like the first diverse critical cleaning company as well. So diversity is not much of it in that space, but they are definitely making improvements to make it more diverse. I see a lot more women in data centers now. I see a lot more people of color in data centers. I'm starting to see higher management of color and females in the industry. So it is a work in progress. So when you're coming in, someone like me, it's like, I feel sometimes like I'm a unicorn. Like,
I know exactly what you mean.
And then like, I've got like, experiences and things that I've implemented in the business, which I expect people to inherit as well and kind of work with. So I guess there is a bit of creativity on that type of level as well.
It's interesting you mentioned or answered the question specifically about like the social aspect, because I want to commend you on like having like a kind of a level hierarchy, like structure of a business. I think it's nice that everyone feels a bit feels valued and has the opportunity to say something.
Mm-hmm.
But you mentioned also about having the specificity of like cleaning data centers specifically, and how, and then you also mentioned about how like when an artist tells you that they paint with just oil-based paintings or a specific subject. Yeah. And I kind of wanted to understand if you correlate the two, where or like bring the two together, where you're cleaning data centers specifically, and if you see that as a type of art yourself.
I look at business as an art.
Okay.
I think if you're able to create something which is very similar to like a painting or a light sculpture, and if you're able to sell that product as well, I look at that as art.
Okay.
I look at the engineering of business as an art. For me, creating C4 and moving to the data center space wasn't my initial goal. My initial goal was for me to create a business and make sure that I was sort of like financially stable from that business, and all the sort of basic stuff, right?
Sure.
But then as business developed and it went further, and then I was lucky enough for me to work within the data center space, I realized that that space could take C4 into a way bigger than I initially anticipated. I do C4 more than just being a business. Like my journey for C4 is I want to show people that anyone can do this.
Okay.
From a business perspective.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people who say they want to do this, but there's reasons behind why they can't, whether they don't have the confidence, whether they don't take rejection very well. And there's a lot of external reasons why people will hesitate from doing something. And I don't want to say like I'm a pioneer, but I want to be able to get it to a point where, you know, someone can look at me and say, if he can do it, then I can do it.
Yeah, nice.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then I want to be able to engage with these people and say, I was managed to get it here, but you can go like further than me. You could take it like with the right education behind you, with the right drive, with the right discipline. This is how far I got it. And I was working at like 60%. If you're working at 70%, you can do this. If you've got the right team behind you, you can do this. And these are my experiences, and these are the things that I've gone through. And like, take it. Like, I'll show you exactly how I got there from doing it. And I think I never had that when I was building C4. Like, I've never had like any sort of mentorship or investment, or you know, a rich uncle who's able to kind of put me,
like some kind
or inherited a business or something like that. So I don't know. I do C4 because I want C4 to be one of the biggest brands in the cleaning and hygiene and data centers. That is like, by all means, that is my goal. But actually, when you get underneath the hood and you really dig deep on why I'm doing this as well, is because like I still remember myself at sort of 15, 16 quite clearly.
Okay.
And I would have loved to have had someone like myself reach out to me at sort of 15, 16 and say, do you know what? You're making some bad mistakes here. You're making some bad decisions. And you can actually achieve something like this if you get your head down. I wasted a lot of time by not having direction, not having that mentorship, not having someone I can look up to. And I don't know, I feel like I'm doing this to give back as well. Like, I want to give back to the people. I want to like, There's a lot of young males out there at the moment who are making like super bad decisions, right? I mean, some of the kids now, they're like 18 and they're getting sentenced to 30 years.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And there's a lot of life being wasted. Mm. Males, females, whatever it is, there's a lot of life being wasted. And I'm trying to make the best out of the life that I was given. And I'm trying to make the most out of it. And I want to be able to create art, kind of like yourself.
Yeah,
put
yeah.
it on a canvas and say, look, this is what I've done.
Yeah.
And I was working at X amount of percentage. And you've got potentially a better back end than me. You've got a mentor. You've got somebody who's prepared to give you some time. And I want to be able to, even if I can make, some people say, if one person, like, I affect one person, then
yeah,
like, that's bad. I want two people. Yeah. I want two people to say, do you know what? Because of what you've done, because of what you spoke to me about, or you showed me this, or you showed me that, or blah, 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 that would make me satisfied as well. Of course, as a level of success, what comes with sort of like financial dependency and that type of freedom.
Yeah.
And Norman expressed this beautifully in our conversation, where he looked at money as like an energy.
Sure.
And in some ways, I can quite relate to that, because it does give you that type of freedom. Money allows you to not have so many mandatory requirements. You can be free and do certain things, right? But you've got to make sure that it doesn't make you ugly. And there is a level of sort of monetary success that I'm looking to achieve. But then actually, when you get deeper than that, I want to be able to affect people and say, do you know what? Like, this guy was super fat, and after having that conversation with me, he's been able to like lose weight and get some confidence and find a girlfriend. Or this guy, you know, was scared to open his own business because he thought that, you know, being a black guy working in a corporate space, they're not going to take me seriously. You know, like all these type of things. And it doesn't need to even necessarily be a business. It could just be like a corporate job space, right? Like, I'm in corporate establishments all the time. I'm having to talk to corporate people all the time.
Yeah.
But if you would have asked me about that when I was sort of like 18, 19, I would have freaked out. I wouldn't have believed that I could be in that type of space.
Of course.
I wouldn't have believed that I belong in that type of space.
Yeah.
I didn't think that anyone would be able to have a conversation with me without sort of judging me on the colour of my skin or whatever that is. And I think if you probably speak to quite a lot of the youth, they make bad decisions probably because of lack of education. And I don't mean that from an intellectual perspective, but maybe they just didn't have someone to say, I'm in this space and I don't come from much of a different background to you.
Yeah.
And I'm in this space. So it might just be like, advice sounds a little bit cliche, but just guidance maybe.
Guidance.
From a role model perspective, I still like to think I'm engaged enough with the youth.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to be like some old man trying to talk to them. Like, I hate it when like the older generation say, you know, you should buy a property and this and that. And that boat sailed ages ago. But there is money in it, but it's not the same as what they were doing.
Yeah.
And then they've got all this advice for something which isn't realistic anymore.
Sure.
No, I think he was going to ask me about sort of, was it like sort of role model perspectives and sort of like,
okay.
Only like the sort of Jeff Bezos and the stuff that you see, and maybe like the unsung heroes.
So like there are like voices within the community, and I feel like you've got your overall like celebrity stars. Like we've been like going to doing these workshops with like kids at Crystal Palace.
Yeah.
And like when they see the players like Eze, they were going crazy for, and like they were like, oh my god, and like absolutely losing their mind, asking for autographs, and like trying to, like we're doing a little pick after the game and then trying to get them to concentrate on anything else apart from trying to get this
big up Eze, by the way.
And I remember like growing up, like Ian Wright, Thierry Henry, just worshipping
gods, aren't
yeah,
they?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like gods. Worshipping these
maybe
people.
Less of the Arsenal players, but I get what you're saying.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like gods, aren't they? Yeah, yeah.
And then, but you tend not to have that type of engagement or understanding within like people or pillars within the community, or people aren't celebrated as much in that kind of way. And
yeah, I think there isn't a they're not reachable.
Mm.
And I don't mean like you can't reach that potential or reach what it is. They're just not reachable. They're almost like a myth.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And unless you are one of the very few selected who are an athlete or a movie star or something like that, the very small percentages in the world who can get to that type of elite level, they're almost not really touchable.
Attainable, yeah, yeah.
So I think what I would have liked when I was that type of age where I was going sort of crazy for football players and all that sort of stuff, I think there probably needs to be more realistic people who can communicate. And I think, like I said, I think it's important that you don't become at an age where you're not relatable. And you need to be able to be engaged and in touch and kind of have a bit of an understanding as well. Because if much older people tried to talk to me, I would have just been like, whatever. You're almost like in a completely different world to me.
Mm-hmm.
So I would love to be able to, while I'm still relatively fresh at these ages, I'd like to be able to document my journey and talk to them about my journey. And I don't want to do it when I've made it.
Because
when I've made it, it's like, I'm going to be the same as that 60-year-old man who told me to buy properties when they were like £2,000.
Of course, of course.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. I want to say, look, this is my journey. This is where I am. Yeah, I'm still getting there.
Yeah.
And like, help me help you. Do you know what I mean? Like, sure. Help me. And I don't want to do it like, you've got to understand as well, you've got a different energy when you're communicating to people when you are out hunting or when you're obese, right?
Yeah,
when you're like full up and you're full up, your belly's round and you're done, yeah? Like, you can't talk about food the same way anymore.
Yeah. Well, as a lion, you're already full from your kill.
Way I'm going to talk about like a restaurant or whatever it is, I don't have the same energy, the same passion about that food anymore.
Sure.
Because I'm full, my belly's round, I'm done.
Yeah.
Top button undone, I'm, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I think it's important to have the right energy of when you are communicating to people while you are still relatively hungry,
mm-hmm.
you know, because you've got a different drive, you've got a different passion, you're communicating differently, you know, you're more invested, you know.
Well, the thing you mentioned about manifestation and like the kind of mind frame that you're in, like, and the mindset, do you think that you will always be in the kind of, like, you mentioned about when you're 60 and you feel like you've made it, but then, like, do you think that when you're 60, you might have the same mindset as you have now?
It depends what we're talking about. Are we talking about that sort of drive for success?
Yeah.
Probably not, because I'd probably be at a mature stage where certain things which are of value to me now probably won't be of value to me when I'm at an older age.
Okay, okay.
I think you also got to appreciate that time as well.
Time and health, like,
exactly right. If you're still trying to do the same sort of things or you still got the same value on certain things at that type of age, then there's probably something wrong. I think we're constantly manifesting no matter what you're doing. Even when you think you're not, you are, you know. If you're going to walk around and you say, you know, I've got money issues, or, you know, my girl don't love me, or, you know, I feel like my kids don't want to see me, or whatever it is. Like, if you just keep replaying those type of thoughts in your head, you're manifesting that. So I don't think whatever age you're going to get to, manifestation is going to stop. I just think you're probably going to be thinking about different things.
Sure. Okay.
So I'll probably be thinking that, you know, 60, who's going to come to my funeral, probably. I don't know. Do you know what I mean? I would probably have different thought processes at that sort of time. Do you know what I'm saying? But it's been brilliant having you on.
Yeah.
Like, I think I could talk to you for, hours. Do you know what I mean?
No, it's been fun.
We could really get deep with it. And if that's what Noah Junk Action does for just conversation-wise, I mean, it's incredible to think of what an actual group gathering of little people can do.
Completely. So, no, I mean, this has been a really I didn't know what to expect from this conversation. I think it's been really quite powerful conversation and like kind of gone into all different areas and been really fun.
No, I appreciate it, man. Thank you so much for coming on, man. I really appreciate you. That.